Hi, this is my favourite Elliott Smith song. In this podcast, we try in our own very small way to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi, and welcome to today's episode. In this one, we're speaking to Sameer Gadia. Sameer is the lead singer of the band Young the Giant. Young the Giant are a Los Angeles-based group who've released four albums, with their most recent record, Mirror Master, coming out about a year ago. And perhaps unsurprisingly, as Sameer's on this podcast, he is a big Elliott Smith fan. In this interview, he talks about what turned him to his music, how he's understanding Elliott's career more and more as his own career progresses, and he also talks through his choice for his favourite song pick too. So we'll go straight ahead with it then. Here's Sameer Gadia talking to Elizabeth Widstanley in Los Angeles.
My name is Sameer Gadia. I'm the singer of Young the Giant. It's a pretty hard decision, but I think it'd have to be A Fond Farewell. It's probably my favorite Elliott Smith song. From a Basement on a Hill is, you know, obviously like a posthumous record. And I'd already been into Elliott Smith a little bit. Actually, a girlfriend had showed me Elliott Smith in high school. And since then, I became obsessed with Elliott Smith and rewired things in my brain so that when I listened to sad songs, it always made me happy. And that's just kind of always how it functioned since then as a music listener. That song always struck me by just how major the chords were, but at the same time, you know, how much it managed to tackle. And that whole record from A Basement on a Hill, even though it wasn't the first record I heard of his, I really felt like, you know, he was an elder statesman. He'd kind of done this, and he'd really refined his sound. He'd refined his tone, and he'd refined his narrative. And now going back into it, you know, now having myself been in this career for almost 12 years and working on our fifth record, I can see that there are a lot of things that I didn't pick up on in the beginning when I first listened to the record in, like, you know, 2004. And the song is obviously, you know, he spent most of his career talking about heroin addiction, and which is something that's been a big part of his life. And I think, at least, that, you know, during the time of From a Basement on a Hill, he was really, really trying to be sober, and I think he'd even like cut out all sorts of things like red meat and sugar, and really, really got into his sobriety. But there was this part of himself that still felt was this passenger that was just kind of beside him. And also, he'd built this idea for Elliott Smith, I think, for other people. He'd created this version of himself that people knew as the Elliott Smith that they'd heard of, and not necessarily the Elliott Smith that he was behind closed doors, the Elliott Smith that he was off stage. And I most definitely sympathize with that, because, you know, the person who I am on stage and who people know me as is entirely different than who I actually am. And that tugs at you, and that can be a very, very weird disassociative thing. Burning on a shining sheet, the only maker that you wanna meet, a dying man in a living room whose shadow paces the floor, will take you out in the open door. A Fond Farewell was able to tackle a song, like, tackle, you know, so many things in layers, which is so important as a songwriter to do. Obviously, he is talking about the disassociative feelings that one has when someone is using or someone is in this addictive cycle. They feel the need to deny, they feel the need to separate themselves from what they're actually doing, making excuses for, you know, who they are, who they could be. And that part kind of sits there, but I think also it's a part of himself that's wanting to disassociate with this idea of Elliott Smith that people had made up for him, and that he'd started to realize was becoming a shtick, and that maybe he was becoming a clown, and that, you know, this Fond Farewell was the kind of a destruction of this of this mythology that he'd created. And the song seems kind of prophetic too, you know, because obviously, you know, shortly after that, you know, he passed away either through suicide or what have you. And he ironically, you know, furthered that mythology and went the next step to even martyr himself, which, you know, a lot of timeless musicians have done. But it's a dangerous thing from a mental health perspective, and also as a narrative of being a musician in this, you know, it's a difficult thing. And seeing him say, you know, farewell to himself, farewell to this person who he isn't, the person that we all know of Elliott Smith, is a sad, it's like a bittersweet thing, because, you know, maybe we never really, I never knew who he actually was, obviously. And I know people who have worked with him closely, and you know, there's so many sides of who you can be, and I think most people don't really understand that until they've gone through it and realized, you know, through the ringer, like how much of a clown you can become. This is not my life. It's just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like. It's just a fond farewell to a friend.
Has your thoughts about this song sort of evolved over time because of sort of the career path that you've gone in?
I think the song most definitely has evolved. I mean, just in what I feel I can relate to him, and the way I listen to music, I guess, has changed. But one thing that I always stick to is with, you know, a few musicians, Elliott Smith being one of them, Radiohead being another, is that I love listening to something where I don't feel like I have to parse it together. I don't have to construct it in my mind. It's something that's like flowing like water. Maybe that's a part of it that, you know, that was just such a formative thing that I'd been listening to, that it's almost impossible for me to analyze it too far. But I think a lot of it's just like his pure genius, is the ability to even have musicians, even the most analytical of musicians, you know, just sit there and enjoy, you know, what he's doing. But as a musician for me, I never thought, you know, in 2004, I was just starting to make music and I was just trying, you know, I was really trying to figure out what my sound was or what our sound was. And I never thought that I'd get to the point of being on a fifth record, nor probably did he. I mean, even with the Heat Miser stuff, and I can see now, you know, how much pressure internally there is when you get to this level in your career. You said, really, I just wanna dance. Good and evil match, perfect, it's a great romance. I can deal with some psychic pain if it'll slow down my higher brain. Things full of disappearing ink, vomiting in the kitchen sink. I think with this song in particular, it's really a great example of his restraint. And I think a lot of musicians will tell you, you know, doing the most complicated thing isn't the hardest thing to do, if you are technically proficient in doing it. I think the hardest thing is to have the ability to do something and then be restrained and use those moments to kind of like crescendo things. And I think that song does that beautifully. And overall, I mean, most of his music is very, very subdued. But even like the guitar work, you know, it's very subtly well done. And he's one of those crazy, crazy underrated guitarists. It's just like, how's he playing this and what with one guitar? But I think in that song in particular, you know, he obviously does have the main guitar line. Then he has a really, really subdued bass line. And he has, like, a slide part that just kind of cuts in and out perfectly. One thing with him that's interesting is that, you know, he always does that, like, his stamp is, like, always doing, like, the wide double on the vocal. It's really interesting. I wonder what a recording would have been like if it was just one voice. But I think something that he chose, but also something that, you know, maybe he used to distance himself in some way. But beyond that, I mean, I just think his guitar work, and his ability to say so much and emote so much without having to go overboard. He's not getting into theatrics. I mean, he's getting into theatrics with the subject matter, but with his voice, he's always like staying at a very, very, you know, steady, steady timbre, and it's that's very exciting for me, especially for someone who like doesn't necessarily do that all the time. I tend to go into theatrics, and sometimes I feel like it's necessary, but he's kind of like the absolute reminder of subtlety sometimes. This is not my life. It's just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like. It's just a fond farewell to a friend. I couldn't get things right. A fond farewell to a friend.
As a musician, and sort of, you know, seeing kind of his sort of struggles with sort of that, you know, being a public figure, I guess, and, you know, going out there on stage, how, and I think, again, you touched upon this, like, how is that, is that something you think about, and does it make an impact? I know, like, it just seems like it's ever-evolving, what people expect from mm-hmm. like going to a performance.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was never a theatrical performer mm-hmm. at all. It was yeah. it was always he's out there and
yeah.
he's playing and
yeah.
you know he yeah. wants the songs all yeah. to sound perfect.
Yeah. I think, you know, the unintended consequences of a performance like go off into a lot of different things. I think for a musician, especially someone who seems to have been as overly analytical as he was, I tend to do that. I tend to, obviously with him, it was just so bare, you know, he was just like there and it was just him on a chair. And you could almost, it's like once you create like a facsimile of yourself, like on stage, it doesn't even matter if you're trying to perform or not trying to perform. It's like a reflection of who you are. So even if he's like fucking up and he's like, I'm sorry, and like that's an act too, right? And then he realizes that his act is that act, and then he's like getting confused about like who he actually is. And I've and then do people want that? Do people want him to be this shy person? Would it be weird if he was just happy, if he had a good day and he could just be himself? Or does he have to be like this, and does he have to be like apologize, and is the mistake is this mistake something that needs to be planned? And it's just, it becomes this like difficult thing to deal with, especially when you're using, and you do this all on your own. I mean, for us, the great thing is that I have four other people in the band to reflect that off of. People have like, shut up, Samir, you're being ridiculous, you know? But with him, you know, it didn't really have too many people. I mean, he had collaborators, but at the end of the day, I mean, he was dealing with the main force of this stuff. And probably like hated some part of it, and it's a very, very weird feeling to and I can most definitely empathize with him now. I don't think I could when I was younger. I just thought that it was, you know, edgy, and like that was just like the thing. And it comes from a real place. It comes from a real rational place. I think anyone put into this world of becoming the king or becoming something, and then having people tell you what they like versus, you know, or pretending that everything you do is amazing, it can become a weird mindfuck, and I could totally get how that would fuel me, especially if his music was about that. And then, you know, it's like, oh, I'm writing about heroin a lot, you know, like, is that my shtick now? Like, am I supposed to like write about heroin all the time? And like, what happens if I don't write about heroin? You know, it's a thing for everyone, you know. I see you're leaving me and taking up with the enemy. The cold comfort of the in-between. A little less than a human being. A little less than a happy high. A little less than a suicide. The only things that you really try. I mean, I don't think ever in my career has anyone said I sound like Elliott Smith, and I don't think that that's ever going to happen. I think for me, it's about inspiration, and that you can tell when artists write from a place of inspiration versus a place of like maybe just theory or calculation. But even just the branching veins of like Elliott Smith and how many people he's influenced throughout the folk sphere and beyond. You know, I think. I think there are some massive Elliott Smith fans like around everywhere. I think, you know, if you guys should try and get Frank Ocean to do one of these interviews. He uses an Elliott Smith lyric in Blonde. I think he's just far reaching because he has that honesty, and he has that like he writes from an inspirational place. And, you know, it doesn't matter what genre that is. I think there are a lot of people seeking that, and people are going to find it. This is not my life, it's just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like, it's just a fond farewell to a friend. You couldn't get things right, a fond farewell to a friend. This is not my life, it's just a fond farewell to a friend.
Thank you then to Samir for taking part in the podcast and for sharing his thoughts on Elliott with us. It's very much appreciated. So as Samir's pick came from a Basement on the Hill, we're going to stick with that album now for our listener choice, which today comes from Sam Harris from Brighton here in the UK.
My favourite Elliott Smith song is Pretty Ugly Before. The reason I've chosen this song is because I think it's a really beautiful example of how Elliott Smith could write a song which had all these hallmarks of a really great pop song without sort of betraying the personality that he could put into a song. So for instance, it's got these really great sort of almost anthemic choruses, almost, you know, sing-along choruses, with this incredibly powerful lyric. And just in terms of moments in that song, like the amount of hairs on the back of the neck that go up, you know, when he sings the line, someone who's more for real, and it has that chord change. It's just, yeah, makes me shiver a bit there. And I think one more reason as well that it just really just does, definitely stands out for me is just the sort of the story of that when, I think it was the day or the day after he died, and they just sort of received it, and it was handed out to sort of fans who had gathered at the sort of figure eight wall, who were grieving, and handed out amongst them. And obviously, from Basement on the Hill hadn't come out yet. Some of those fans would have probably seen it live. I think it was being played live for a fair bit, maybe. But that would have had that sort of profound moment of a lot of them would have taken it and to listen to them in that sort of stage. And I think a lot of people would have been thinking about him, and it makes me think a lot about that sort of community that was sort of around him and how much sort of people were missing him. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much to Sam for sending that to us. And as usual, if you want to be featured on the show, then please do send us a voice note of you talking through your favourite Elliott Smith song to info@myfavouriteelliottsmithsong.com. And that's pretty much it for today's episode. I just want to quickly finish by letting you know what's up next on the podcast. In a couple of weeks' time, we'll be joined by Prateek Kuhad, a singer-songwriter based in New Delhi in India. I think I'm right in saying that Prateek's our first guest from outside the US or the UK, so it'll be interesting to bring you a slightly different perspective on Elliott's music. His own work is also great too, so do check it out if you haven't heard of him before. Anyway, I'll leave it there for now and say thank you to our guests today, Samir Gadia and Sam Harris. And thanks also to Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for producing this podcast with me. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.